That's right. That's me. That's my new slogan. Yesterday I was beaten upon for my views on gay marriage and kind of laughing at some of the things the Supreme Court gets involved in. And so I had that special little presentation developed by my big voice guy. So how about that? And if you don't like it, too bad. Here's a guy who's probably going to love it. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Charlie Hurt. He writes the nuclear option column for the Washington Times. Today's is entitled, Please Withhold Your Judgment of Prison Father-Daughter Dances. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Sitting in the playroom here today, having some fun. You know, I saw your column, and my first question was, wow, they really still hold these events, huh?
Yeah, it's really sort of bizarre, and I don't even really know what to make of it, the notion of doing this inside a Richmond City jail. It's more of that sort of soft diplomacy that we see with jails across the country where we think that if we're really nice to criminals, maybe they will, maybe they will reform themselves. But certainly in this case, you know, it's an attempt to do something to deal with this. Something like, greater than 50% of children growing up without fathers in their lives and, you know, raised by single mothers. But what I thought was so amazing about it was you had the story, and, you know, the Washington Post did the story, and what they chose to focus on was the outrage. There's this outrage that there are father-daughter dances out there because they're discriminatory to people that don't have fathers. And talk about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, my goodness, how is that discriminatory?
I know. You know, this is one of those stories where if you understand the history of these dances, it was a means to try to shock fathers into realizing their wrong ways and how important it was to get back to their families and do the right things in life. And yet, you know, now they're beaten upon for trying to do that.
Yeah, and to focus on my goodness, what's important in life, such as the child you
bore.
I mean, that's kind of, I mean, I can't think of anything more important in life than making sure that, you know, you take that honor seriously. But the other thing that is so strange to me about, you know, you've got your feminists, your ACLU types and all these people that get so upset about this, and they say that that there was one guy quoted talking about how, not every girl wants to grow up to be a Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they call it gender stereotyping.
Yeah.
Which I find so, I mean, it would be comical if it weren't so tragic. Because you want to ask these people, okay, how's that working out? How is single motherhood working out for people? How's that working out for little boys? How's
mm-hmm.
that working out for little girls? How's that working out for women? Are women better off because their husbands have taken off and left them? I think probably not.
Yep. And all you have to do is look to the inner cities, some of the problems we've seen recently, even in Chicago, and you know that there are, countless numbers of women there petrified on a daily basis that their children are growing up in an environment where there is no father, or if there is a father, he's out on the street as part of a gang.
Yeah, and the people that make these arguments about gender stereotyping and how, you know, we need to celebrate, you know, single motherhood by the way, in no way am I suggesting that we should denigrate the people that do this. I think that actually maybe we should try to help them every way we can.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that somehow this is to be celebrated, it's always by people who claim to be helping those people. They're not helping them. They're hurting them.
Sure.
And they're destroying, they're helping, they're celebrating the destruction of that, the most important fabric there is that keeps boys from growing up and running into gangs, girls from growing up and winding up getting pregnant too early in their lives when they can't afford it and
mm-hmm.
can't handle motherhood. I mean, my goodness, it's just, but the rest of us who are genuinely worried about this are just sort of cast off as being sort of, I guess we're closed-minded and hateful and obviously prejudiced.
Yeah.
For actually wanting something good, you know, good lives to come out of all
yeah.
of
this. Yeah, and I saw four letters in your piece today that always strike fear into people's hearts, and that's ACLU.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny too because you know I'm all about freedom. I love, you know, I'm all about civil liberties. I think all that stuff. There, to me, there's nothing more. You know, my entire view of gun ownership is based on the belief that, you know, that, that people should be able to protect themselves and should be able to protect their own liberties. But I tell you, these guys are nuts. I mean, they're just crazy where they come up with this stuff, such as gender stereotyping, and therefore these guys in the Richmond City Jail shouldn't be allowed to have a father-daughter's dance with their little girls.
Yeah.
You know, the, somehow that offends them.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you so angry? What makes you so angry?
Yeah. All right. Before I let you run out of here today, I wanted to talk about a couple other things. So you've been following this whole gay marriage in the Supreme Court.
I understand. Well, first of all, of course, the press has determined that the Defense of Marriage Act is on its last legs,
yeah.
which is great because, of course, they also told us that Obamacare was going to be rejected. So I'm taking it all with a grain of salt. But I did see one place where they were some of the justices were very concerned about states' rights regarding the Defense of Marriage Act, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Since when did the Supreme Court become concerned about states' rights, A? And B, when did the media suddenly, like, give reasonable treatment, positive treatment to a concern about states' rights?
Yeah. No, it's very true. In fact, I just played a couple sound bites a little while ago, one from Justice Samuel Alito and another from Antonin Scalia. And there was an interruption in it by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But in both cases, it's almost as if they were trying to hand this off. They really didn't want anything to do with it. Maybe we ought to leave it up to the states, and particularly in the case that deals with Prop 8 in California, because that was the wish of the people. I mean, that was something that was voted upon by the people. And I got a funny feeling the court's going to be a little reluctant to step all over that.
Yeah, and but of course, you know, I don't know that the courts could have done anything, you know, committed any greater violation of states' rights than, of course, they did with Roe v. Wade,
mm-hmm.
in which they basically superseded all states' wishes and said no. Not only is abortion legal, but it must be legal in all these states. You may not infringe upon this. This guaranteed right to
yeah.
So-called right to privacy, which is of course found in a penumbra. And if Andy, you could ever explain to me what the freak is a penumbra, I would really appreciate it, because I to this day cannot figure out what a penumbra is.
Well, I'm sure Ann knows the answer, and I'll ask her after the show.
She knows everything.
Yeah, because I don't want to embarrass her right now. Actually, I wouldn't really embarrass her because I'm assuming she knows, but
of course she knows.
She's just busy right now. You know, she has other things to do. She doesn't worry about this radio
whatever
show.
Whatever a penumbra is, I think I would like one. I think I
yeah.
want a penumbra.
It's like,
as
something
long as
that you
with the rest of my clothes.
Yeah, something like you order at a Panera. You know.
Yeah. Well, if it's food and you can put meat in it, then I would like one, and I would like it toasted.
All right, let's see. One more thing on my list, and that is Obamacare. You kind of touched on that a minute ago. I don't know if you've seen it, but HHS Secretary Sebelius has had to come out and say, "Yep, it's going to cost you a whole lot more money." She had to admit it.
Yeah. Did you see the amounts? That it's going to increase
I know.
In places like Ohio.
Yeah, it's like 80% or something like
yes.
that. Yeah, I know.
I think I saw somewhere in Michigan. I mean, a state, I lived there for a number of years. It's a state close to my heart. They have had some of the worst economic problems. Something like a 60%. I could be wrong about that number, so I shouldn't say it. But a huge increase. In,
yeah.
And I mean, my goodness. And of course, a state like Michigan is largely Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of poor people, especially living in Detroit, where I live. My goodness. Do you think that's going to help them or hurt them in terms of access to health care? I'm thinking it's going to kind of not be such a great thing.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, Charlie Wilson, great to talk to you. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, take care. Charlie Hurt, he writes a nuclear option column for the Washington Times. Today's is entitled, "Please Withhold Your Judgment of Prison Father-Daughter Dances." By the way, I've got more on that Obamacare and the cost that you and I will incur as a result of that fantastic piece of legislation that was signed into law 3 years ago. That'll be coming up in the next hour. Stay right here. It's 3:58. Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times.